Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Woo! This is Tom. I'm with Jeff. This is The Payoff. That was not a good woo. Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
You'll have to close strong. I'm doing great, my friend.
It was like a little girl woo. It just didn't have the oomph to it.
You didn't put your diaphragm in your speaker. Better. Yeah, that was better. You know, you got to put your diaphragm into it. So, yeah.
And I also do need to be a quarter of an inch from the microphone. So I'm sorry to you and all our listeners on that.
We should volume check. Yeah, sorry about that. So this should be good. How many times can you say, you know, you get to talk about a Hulk Hogan debut? This is an exciting one. Even though it debut, use it loosely, but that's where we're at. That's what we're doing, and this should be fun.
This is a wild time in the wrestling business. Yes. I got so many thoughts about this match, this feud, the way they used Hogan pre-NWO, the behind the scenes of how they brought him in. There's just a lot of shit going on to talk about.
Yeah, a ton, and it should all be really good stuff. But of course, as everybody
plug our social media.
Make sure to check us out on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Payoff Pod. You should know it by now. If not, you know, we're going to keep saying it anyway. So at Payoff Pod, at Payoff Tom, at Payoff Jeff, make sure to check us out. You know, drop those reviews. We still see people doing that. We're going to keep bringing you episodes, and we're pretty close here. We got a big anniversary coming up for ourselves here in a couple weeks here. So exciting stuff. You know, we're at a year kind of bringing you these episodes. So we're going to keep doing it though. So good stuff. So Tom, what do you got?
Jeff, it's our payoff versity.
Yes,
it versary. Is. Yeah. Payoff versary.
Payoff versary, yes.
Hashtag payoff versary.
And we're gonna start using it. Absolutely.
Done. That's a good one. Please make it a thing, okay?
Yeah, so share us your favorite episode. Yes, absolutely. That's what we're gonna have to dig back in the archives. But good stuff. Okay.
So why we want to cover this match?
Why you want to cover it, my friend?
Dude, because we should have got this match at WrestleMania 8 inside the Hoosier Dome. That's why I want to cover it. So the backstory is that, you know, this is the biggest star in the WWF, Hulk Hogan, the biggest star down south in WCW, NWA, Ric Flair. Flair finally goes up to New York. He's there. You think you're going to get WrestleMania 8 Hogan Flair. You don't. They never wrestle outside of some house shows. I happen to be at one of them, but they just don't really wrestle. The entire time he's there, it makes zero sense. And again, there's excuses for it and reasons and blah, blah, blah. These two should have been the main event of WrestleMania 8. They weren't. You think about those iconic Hogan WrestleMania matches of him and Warrior, him and Savage. Should have been him and Flair, man. And who knows what the hell could have happened, but we don't get it. It sucks. All right, so you've heard me say it before. I'll bitch about it again, but we get robbed of that. So he ends up in WCW, and we get this match. It's a big freaking deal. This is a company that was bleeding money. This is a company that was, if it wasn't for Turner, wouldn't have existed, right? They were being bankrolled by Turner. They were not a profitable business venture. So we get this match, and it's a big deal, and I'm excited to talk about it for that reason. So both these guys are still in their physical primes. It's really fascinating. What about you, Jeff?
Absolutely. This one, yeah. Again, this is another one we talk about so much of, like Hulk, you know, NWO and kind of, you know, Hollywood and all this other stuff. But this was just one area where, you know, him, how he came to WCW, and there's a whole lot that happened that we'll talk about in the build with that. Like, again, like bits and pieces, but not all of it. And boy, did they roll out the red carpet for him. Like, and so they did a whole thing, which we'll talk about. But it's just one of those, the piece that, like, while we know he came over, how he came over in the story is a piece that I just didn't remember.
Yep. So let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right, dude. So July 17th, 1994, Bash at the Beach 94. We're in the Orlando Arena, which I've been before because that was the old Magic Arena, Amway Arena, prior to the new Amway Arena. The building's a shithole. And it reminded me of where I used to grow up watching hockey, the Civic Arena in Pittsburgh. It was just one of those old cement bowl arenas. It was not a good venue at all. But that's where they're at. And Bash at the Beach was not at a beach. Okay, I hate to break it to you, but Orlando is not on the coast. So no. thought that was kind of ironic. 14,000 in attendance. This is a big money maker for the company. I'll get more into it. You know, some highlights of the card. We had Steven Regal, Johnny B. Bad, Vader and the Guardian Angel, who we remember as the Big Boss Man, Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck against Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson, stunning Steve Austin and Ricky Steamboat for the U.S. heavyweight title, pretty wonderful, full of Roma and Orndorff defeating Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan, and then the reason we're here, Hogan and Flair. There's a lot of talent on this show, you know? I mean, WCW had some good wrestlers, some good names, a lot there. We'll get more into who Hogan was programmed with and how they really did this. But, you know, what's fun and what I want to talk about during the match is you really had a two-year period before the Hogan heel turn. You had Bash at the Beach 94, and then that happened at 96. So you had 2 years of red and yellow, Hogan good guy, big star. And it's amazing how poorly they used him, but he was Hulk Hogan, so they made money. So 14,000, that's the pay-per-view record for WCW. It breaks the 13,000 that were there for the 88 Great American Bash. They also did a 1.02 buy rate for this. That's 2.5 million in sales. The previous year did half this, 0.5, 1.1 million. And then 8,600 in attendance. So what's the value of Hulk Hogan? Well, it's $1.4 million in additional pay-per-view sales, right? I mean, it's a big deal to have him there. And then obviously, you know, you just went with the biggest match you could have initially, right? They swung for the fences, went for the home run right out of the gates. One of the things I didn't know, obviously we've heard the whole courtship, Bischoff, Flair, they're trying to sign Hogan. He's at the MGM studios filming Thunder in Paradise. What I didn't realize, Jeff, is that WWF had 30 days to match WCW's offer. They obviously didn't. Now, basically, and I want to talk about this more during the match, but Vince McMahon in this era had a tendency to just be done with people, right? He's done with Hogan. Even around WrestleMania 17, 18, he's done with Austin. And part of me just thinks it's absurd, but we have to remember the business then was different, right? The Vince McMahon business model of the 1980s, the 1990s was your star has to wrestle 200 matches a year. They've got a headline every house show. They've got to be everywhere. They've got to be doing all the interviews. And so if your guy wasn't the workhorse, he really wasn't worth much to you. You didn't have the Brock Lesnar's coming and going. You didn't have the Goldbergs. You didn't have the Undertakers. They didn't have those types of attractions in these eras, at least. Yep. I mean, it just didn't happen. So, you know, you think now, okay, now that we're in the network era, would Hogan have ever walked? No. Why would he have not? Because you would have brought him back 6 or 8 times a year. He wouldn't have had to wrestle on TV, and you could have gotten a long run out of him. You think about Steve Austin and Conrad and JR were just talking about this when Steve Austin took his ball and walked home, because it was all or nothing. It was either you're going to wrestle 20 minutes on 6 house shows a week, or you're not, you have no place here. Now you can do the Lesnar model, and imagine Steve Austin's career if, you know, his last 2 years or last year that he was in the business, if they would have said, hey, we need you for 8 pay-per-views a year. Shit, he might have wrestled another 5 years. He wouldn't have been burned out. He wouldn't have been on the road 250 nights a year. It would have been completely different. So you think about the future of the wrestling business and how are the matches going to be different? How are the stars going to be different? How's the longevity going to be different if these guys don't have to either be all in or all out? So that's what I have for you, Jeff. You tell, oh, and by the way, in the midst of all this, we have the Vince McMahon steroid case, and we have Nails suing him for, you know, this whole attack. And then he said, oh, Vince McMahon was sexually abusing me. I mean, it's just crazy shit, man. Crazy era. Hogan's jumping to WCW. The unthinkable's happening. Oh, my gosh. What else did I leave out?
Yeah, just kind of crazy stuff here with the build of just, like you said a little bit, this was the time where you had one of the doctors, he was the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission, stating that he had been selling steroids to wrestlers and a couple different ones, but in particular into Hogan. And so that was a big piece of this with kind of what was happening. This is when he was in WWF, so 92, 93, dealing with that. A lot of, you know, depending on, some of us older listeners probably remember they are sitting Hall show, which was a late night talk program.
That guy was so underrated. I don't understand why. And I think he may have come back with some Netflix stuff. Man, he was awesome.
He was awesome. And there's some clips that have been floating around since where like he challenges some people in the crowd and like yelling at people and things like that for like, you know, defending, like, yeah, it was really good stuff.
Two of the guys that I just don't think got enough notoriety and I just thought were incredible were him and Norm Macdonald.
Yeah, both of them. And Norm's another really good one too. And so, you know, credit. I was like Craig Kilborn too, or not Craig Kilborn, Craig Ferguson. Yeah. So, good stuff though on that. But Hogan actually went on to the Arsenio Hall show because at the time he was one of the top late night programs. He would have wrestlers on from time to time, and it was really he went on the show to kind of defend himself and deny the allegations. And so because it was so bad with this stuff with the steroids, though, Hogan actually took some time off and kind of went away for a little bit. Like that's how bad it was, and that's an episode for a different day. Maybe we do a special one on kind of the steroid scandal, what happened. There's some, it was a court case and everything. And like, there's pictures that I was kind of looking up some things of like, you know, Dave Meltzer with this long, like flowing hair, like sitting, being asked questions and stuff, like just like real incredible, like the feathered, he looked like one of the Von Erichs. Like it was just incredible. So, you know, it kind of dealing with that, kind of seeing that. So that's, you know, where Hogan was and taking some time away. So he actually came back a little bit. He was helping out. It was Brutus the Barber Beefcake. The two of them were feuding with Money Inc. That was IRS and the Million Dollar Man. They actually renamed themselves as well to the Mega Maniacs. So you had Hulk and Brutus. And then you also had them taking on who was at the time Money Inc.'s former manager, Jimmy Hart. So you had Jimmy Hart, Bruce Barber Beefcake, and Hulk Hogan, which like 90s me, like that is a, you can't beat that pairing right there. Like, you know,
Beefcake, I thought that whole angle was great. I mean, yeah. it was kind of a, like a DQ weird finish in the WrestleMania match. And Ted was pretty banged up with his back. I mean, his career was almost over. IRS wasn't exactly the best worker, but that storyline and like what they did there was actually really underrated. There's some good stuff there, some good promos. That was actually the first time Hogan was on Raw, right? Because Raw was relatively new, and it was really cool. It was good stuff.
Yeah, in that time of year. So you had those tag teams kind of taking each other on. It was WrestleMania 9 had that, which Money Inc. won by DQ and kind of having that. But interesting, though, kind of a lot of this double duty, though, while you had a lot happening on this one in a very quick amount of time, because you had Hogan, you had almost a 20-minute match with, you know, Brutus, IRS, and the Money or Million Dollar Man. And them taking each other on. And then really like barely an hour later, and this is the one for, you know, those, remember, you had Yokozuna beating Bret Hart for the championship. But then immediately after that, very quickly after that, you had Hogan pinning Yokozuna for the championship. And so Hogan kind of having the belt at that time. And so you had him defending the title. It was actually June 1993. And so kind of having that as well too, and kind of getting into that. This was kind of, I say, the end of it for him, where Hogan ended up, you know, defending the title against Yokozuna at that point, but Yokozuna eventually beating him at that one. And so that was actually really his last pay-per-view appearance, that King of the Ring in June 1993, until early 2000s. And so it was just one of those ones where, you know, him kind of going out, doing what he did. And again, this was not part of the King of the Ring tournament, but it was these two guys and Yokozuna beating him. So he did do a little stint in New Japan during this time too, but that was, you know, his, the end of his WWF, WWE career. So, cause he sat out really until his contract expired. So Bash at the Beach Week, we said it was July 17th, 1994, but we have to first talk about June 11th, 1994. This was the ceremonial contract signing that has been like no contract signing that we have ever seen before. This is one of those where there's video out there, and Tom, I don't know if you watched it or not before this one, but this was WCW Saturday Night. It was at the Disney MGM Studios with Hulk Hogan, really, I say the red carpet being rolled out for him, but it was so much more than that. They gave him, the video is incredible because there's like confetti, like he's
the ticker tape parade. Oh yeah, I've seen it a million times. It's crazy what they did for that.
So he's sitting on the top of a Corvette Viper, something like that at the time, with, you know, the top open, like very like, you know, parade style, waving to the fans, you know, as they said, like crowds kind of lining the street, all this other thing to see him come, confetti flying everywhere, balloons. They made it seem like there was a huge crowd. There was maybe, you know, they played some tricks with the camera angles to kind of play him up that way. But, you know, just this giant, you know, celebration for him coming to WCW and being a part of this. And this was, it capped off with him getting out of the car, going up on stage behind a podium and signing his WCW contract. Now, I didn't remember, I remember like that piece of it, but I did not remember all of this and kind of the pomp and circumstance of it. You had Mean Gene out there too, kind of announcing. And so this was, like I said, barely a month before this Bash at the Beach would take place and it really his debut. He called Ric Flair out on the spot. Like that was immediately, like, you know, that was part of him being there, was to call Ric Flair out and kind of have this match. Now, what was Ric Flair doing up until this point? That same month, Clash of Champions, you had 27. Flair actually beat Sting. It was a unification match. It merged the International World Heavyweight Championship and the World Heavyweight Championship. And it also kind of made, you know, Flair back and forth all the time. He was a heel at this time. And so you had him being the now unified champ and undisputed WCW champ, taking on the incoming Hulk Hogan from WWF in like really a month out. And so, you know, behind some mic work and things like that, that kind of led up to this. But again, like, you know, we've been a couple of these very quick build, you know, very, you know, really a month of kind of what we got this. But I think the they didn't need a ton of like in-ring kind of back and forth to, you know, get the build anywhere because Hogan's Hogan and he's debuting. So really, what more story do you need than that? And that's what the story that they decided to tell. So, Tom, what do you got?
Yeah, you know, it kind of built itself, right? I mean, you certainly didn't need it. There was a lot of buzz around it. I've got some issues with who they paired him with, and I would have done things differently. I'm going to talk about that during the match. So I say we get right down to business. Let's get to the payoff. For those who want to watch it with us, we are at the 2-hour and 7-minute mark of Bash at the Beach 1994. Bash at the Beach 1994, 2-hour and 7-minute mark. For those who want to watch with us. So, Jeff, are you ready?
I'm ready, my friend.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
The greatest moments in the history of the 20th century.
A much younger looking Bruce Buffer is announcing, let's get ready to rumble. He's got his entrances. Were you a Buffer fan? Did you like this? Okay. Yeah, me too.
Michael Buffer.
What did I say? Bruce? Bruce? Is Bruce the brother that does the MMA stuff?
Bruce does MMA, yeah.
Okay, so this is Michael Buffer. Okay.
Yeah, we want to make sure we get that. We know what happens with name mix-ups here.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So Michael Buffer calling this one in the ring and kind of doing that. Yes. And of course he was, I remember, and I'm sure you had it just like I did, the, was it Jock Jams 1 or 2 where the first track was him saying, let's get ready to rumble. Like,
yeah,
that was great. So some setup here too that we didn't talk about. So Flair is in the ring. They're kind of showing him now, but and Hogan, but you've also got a lot of other people in the ring too.
It's a lot happening here.
You've got who, I say the sensational Sherry. She wasn't the sensational Sherry.
Sensatious.
Yes.
They called her sensatious Sherry.
So you have Mr. T just draped in the gold and chains and kind of doing all that. You've got Jimmy Hart looking fantastic in that suit. Hogan looking young as shit. Like,
isn't it amazing?
Just crazy how young he looks. And then for you also have as well Shaquille O'Neal towering over everybody in the ring as well too. So just wrestling, man, just crazy times right now.
Man, Hogan fired up.
And you got one of the fans showing up with his wrestling buddy, showing it up, showing it in the crowd as well too. So that's always fantastic. So
Hogan's in great shape, man.
Yeah, just crazy to think too, like you said, like this match occurring when it did. Even Flair, like Flair looks really young too, which is just crazy to think, especially like
these guys. I mean, they're in the prime of their careers. I mean, you could argue maybe a little past their prime, but they're still pretty much in their prime, man. This is 1994. They both look great. They're in fantastic shape. I mean, everyone wanted to see this match.
But Hogan too, even like he was in his, I mean, he was still in his 40s at this time, like, you know, which is just crazy to think about because he's 66 right now. But then the other piece of it too is like Flair is 70, 71. And so like even that, like he was 50 years old at this point. So like, well, we say in their prime, like they had wrestled a lot. They had a lot of wear on the tire at this point too.
Shaquille O'Neal holding up the title right before he ditches Orlando to go to LA. Bah, I think he left in 96. What'd you think of Hogan's WCW music? The red and yellow with what was it called? Not Real American. American made.
I don't think nothing will ever compare to the I'm a Real American.
Or the
Hendrix. Like, yeah, just
yeah. See, I like this better than the Hendrix. I don't know. It wasn't terrible, but yeah, it just doesn't feel the same.
I think I grew up on that, so that was just. Yeah, dealing with that. But
so Hogan's lucky he owned the red and yellow and a lot of those trademarks and stuff, man. Vince was obviously a lot more protective as the years went on.
You really wonder, like, you know, why, like, Vince didn't pay him just an ungodly amount of money to stay. Like, you hear about that nowadays where they're doing the contracts to kind of keep guys locked up. But like, it's just unfathomable to me to be like, why he let him get away.
But yeah, so think about this, right? So, God, they both are moving around great. So, but here, think about this, right? Hogan goes to WCW. Instead of losing $23 million in 93, they break even in 94. Why did they break even? Because of Hulk Hogan. There's no other reason. It's just Hulk Hogan, okay? So he was a $20 million swing in terms of profitability for them. Okay, great. So then 95, they get better. 96, they get the NWO and take off. 97, they're kicking Vince's ass. 98, you know, before Austin comes along, they almost put Vince out of business. So Vince's ego causes Hogan to end up in WCW and almost puts Vince out of business because of it. So yeah. Should you have paid Hogan more? Yeah. Should you have rode him into the ground? Yeah. I mean, think about Hogan physically. You could have gotten matches out of him at WrestleMania 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Okay. So you had another decade of Hulk Hogan. Gosh, we don't know what to do with Hogan anymore. You know, people are sick of the red and yellow. Okay, then you turn him heel. I mean, they talked about that at, you know, WrestleMania 6, 7, 8 range. They talked about turning him heel right after the Warrior match. So, you know, you could have used him as an attraction, used him as the Babe Ruth. I mean, there's things that you could have done. So It's not 20/20 hindsight. You look at the guy. He's 6'6". He's in great shape. You could have done a lot with him, but turn him evil. Feud him against Bret Hart. I mean, there's just so much that could have been done, but instead, you cause all this to happen.
Which in the match, kind of slow start here. Hogan mimicking Flair, kind of doing the strut, the woo, things like that. It's fun to see.
Really slow start. Really slow start.
I'm with you too, but I think it speaks to, and we've seen it, like Vince's inability to pick a lane on some of these people, because you've got, like, you know, whether they're going to be a face or heel. Because how long did we talk about, is Cena going to turn or not? Like, you know, and even then, like Seth turning or not, like, he's like, well, what do you guys think? Like, they're so non-committal about what they're actually doing in the role. Like, it just doesn't make a ton of sense. I think it speaks to it. Like, Vince was, he wasn't going to pull the trigger on that. Now, I don't know if you saw recently too, and of course it's been in the water forever now, like the Mount Rushmore of wrestling. I feel like people talk about the last 6 months, but like, so Flair named two of his Mount Rushmore. And he said he couldn't name a number three or four. He didn't know who number three or four would be, but the two that he did name was Dusty Rhodes and Vince.
Oh,
so, and he was taking it as creativity and not just wrestling, which, fair, I guess you could say that, because I think if you take like just creativity and creating wrestling what it was, I think Vince has to be on it. And feel free to debate me online, but you know, I think that's just one of those where, and I find it interesting too, Flair not being able to come up with two more people that, you know, should be there. Hell, list your name, or list your own name. Like, that would have made sense.
Yeah, no kidding. I want to – this is a good opportunity to do this because it's a slow start to the match.
Yes.
Let me walk you through. So basically, Hogan debuts Bash at the Beach 94, and we know he turns heel Bash at the Beach 96, okay? So there's a 24-month period where Hogan is in WCW in the red and yellow. And, you know, obviously, biggest wrestling star in the history of the business. What do you do with him? Okay. Now, let me start at the outset. I believe putting him and Flair together for this first match was a huge mistake. I would have kept Flair champion and built to them at Starrcade, which would have been another 6 months from now. So I think that's a terrible mistake. You're paying to see Hulk Hogan debut in WCW more than you're paying for Hogan Flair. So yep. What I would have done is at that ticker tape parade, you have Vader attack him.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay. And I maybe there's someone else, but on that roster, you look at it and it's like, man, Vader's just a big ass bastard heel. Why don't you start off with Hogan Vader and have Vader attack him? And now you've got a reason for, because a couple things, if you're giving Hogan the title shot in his first match, it makes it feel like big fish, small pond. But if you have a guy that's physically bigger than him, like a Vader, you're like, oh shit. Like that's a big ass heel. That's more of a threat than Sergeant Slaughter or Sid or the Ultimate Warrior. Like this guy's unlike anyone that we've seen in WWF. Like he's the size of, you know, a King Kong Bundy or an Andre the Giant. So that's what I would have done. And I would have taken that feud to the fall. He overcomes Vader. He beats him in a regular match, beats him in a cage. Maybe him and Savage team together to beat Vader and someone else. And then you get to Ric Flair, Starrcade, biggest match in the history of wrestling. Flair looks solid. He's ready to go. Hogan's now getting a shot, and you crown him at your big WrestleMania. That's what I would have done. Instead, Hogan debuts, you get this match immediately, okay? Then we go to Fall Brawl, Hogan's not on it. Then we go to Halloween Havoc, and it's a retirement cage match against Flair. So you're going back to that match. Starrcade, guess who he wrestles? Starrcade 94 in December. Mm. Brutus Beefcake, known as the Butcher.
Yes.
So that sucks, right? Obviously. Then we go to Super Brawl, we get Vader, finally. That's in a DQ. Then we get Uncensored strap match against Vader. Then we get Slamboree, him and Savage against Vader and Flair. He's not on Great American Bash. Then we get a cage match against Vader, Bash 95. So they're just no heels for him, right? They go over to Korea for that big two-day event. Hogan's not on it. Ben Hogan's involved in the War Games at Fall Brawl 95. His shitty, horrible, terrible match against the Giant at Halloween Havoc. That was that controversial, off-the-building bullshit, horrible. Vacant title, so World War III, Savage wins the title. Last eliminating the one-man gang. That must have been suspenseful. Hogan's not on that show. Hogan's not on Starrcade either. I'm guessing he was filming something or he'd used up all his dates. Then we get Hogan Giant in a Super Brawl cage match. No title involved there. A big cage match at Uncensored. It's Hogan and Savage against every heel they had. He's not on Slamboree or Great American Bash. And then boom, we have 96 Bash at the Beach heel turn. So you just screwed this whole thing up, right? I mean, his first 2 years in WCW mostly sucked, but because he's Hulk Hogan, they still made money, they still drew, but fans were sick of the red and yellow by the end of it, and, you know, it was great that he turned heel. But I would have debuted him against Vader. I would have gotten a few matches out of that. Then I would have built to Flair, and then I would have tried to turn someone else heel to feud with him. You could have gone back to Savage as a heel, but probably not because the Slim Jim contract. Maybe Luger's a heel. Maybe Sting's a heel. Maybe you bring someone else in that's a big bastard. Giant obviously was not ready to wrestle in front of an audience, but you know, they fast tracked him to the roster. So those are my thoughts. I know that's a lot, but when I tell you all that, what do you think?
If nothing else, I kind of hear some of the names that you're kind of saying and kind of who their talent was at this time, but like, how did it not go off? I mean, they did kind of take off at this point, but like, how are they still not around? You know, I mean, I get it. We know all the story now and kind of what happened and things like that, but like, just in sheer talent, like, man, they were better than WWF in a lot of ways. Like,
oh, and I mean, you had all that, but then remember, you also, of guys I didn't mention, you also had Steve Austin, you had Ricky Steamboat, although he would end up, you know, having a career shortening back injury. You had Rick Rude around this time, again, until his back injury. Johnny B. Bad, Steven Regal, you know, Harlem Heat's coming soon. Road Warriors were still involved a little bit. They were kind of bouncing around. Arn Anderson, some Four Horsemen guys. I'm probably leaving some other guys out, but there was talent, man. And then remember, they had money because of Ted Turner, and they had a good TV contract that eventually became better when they got on Nitro. You had Pillman, you had Liger, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and then obviously everything that happened, I mean, look, they did a lot of things right to make, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, but then they also really did a world-class job of screwing it all up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and this match too, like, we haven't talked too much about this match because there's not really a lot. I mean, they're wrestling, but there's not a ton of action. Like, yeah, you know, they're kind of having spots and stuff like this. And I think it speaks to probably the fact that we've got a 40-year-old and a 50-year-old.
Crowd's pretty silent, man.
Yeah, they're just kind of sitting there too. They're not really a ton happening. Like you said, like, you got these guys that are like, yes, it's Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan. They're, you know, at the, you know, two of the top names in wrestling ever. But like,
sometimes people just don't mix, you know? I mean, both of them had better matches against Randy Savage because the guy was a better worker.
Yeah. Well,
both of them had great matches. Both of them had great matches at the end of their career with Shawn Michaels, right? I mean, it's the right dance partner. Undertaker and Goldberg should not be wrestling, but either one could have a really damn good match with AJ Styles.
Right, absolutely. And that's what it really boils down to, is who do you put them with and kind of, you know, can they get a good match with each other? You hear that a lot of times, like Kurt Angle getting a good match out of somebody. Like, there's just certain wrestlers that are always going to get a good match out of someone. You know, Michaels is probably the top of that mountain. Like, you know, and yes, AJ is probably nipping at his heels the longer he's going to be in wrestling. And so
Daniel
Bryan, yeah, always going to get a good match out of somebody. Just one of those
CM Punk, things. Kevin Owens, you know, there's some guys out there that they just don't have bad matches.
And part of this too, I wonder how much of it plays into, like, we've got the reverse of like, you know, time of like, you know, the expectation, like we knew what this match is and kind of what it's done, you know, over the years and the expectations that were there. And I know recently, like kind of AJ was talking about his WrestleMania match with Nakamura. And he's like, there's just no way it could have lived up to the expectations, no matter what we did because of what they did in New Japan and kind of working together and things like that, which is that also banned from AEW, Linda Hogan sitting in the front row right there.
Oh yeah. I forgot Linda and Hulk are. Yeah. That is Linda front row.
Yes, they're both banned from AEW right now. So I think that speaks that like this match, like the expectation, like maybe at the time, like this is what people wanted, but like already like kind of watching this match, kind of sitting here now, it's kind of like, I'm just not impressed. Like, yeah. So you can kind of guess what my score is going to be here, but you know, yeah, it's just one of those things. And again, we never see this either, the raising of the hand to make sure that they're actually passed out. It was something that Hogan did better than anybody. But yeah, and so I wonder, like, you know, expectation and like you said, kind of like the work rate and them like kind of being good together. You just really wonder kind of like who, you know, what it's all those factors, like what really played into it and didn't play into it.
Yeah, Hulk and getting a little bit of momentum here.
Hulk hulking up a little bit, yep.
I mean, the announcers are going a lot crazier than the crowd is.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like you're saying, like the crowd just not even a little bit, cheering a little bit here, but they're just not losing their mind like you might expect, yeah.
So let me hit you with something.
Go.
Is Sensational Sherry one of the most underrated managers of all time?
Yeah, probably.
I think
I think we've seen her get involved in a couple different matches right now since, and I think this is just one of those where, yeah, like, you know, just super underrated. And like she's been involved in very big moments too. So to not, and there's one of those like, and you know, or managers, valets, whatever you want to call it. There's a few that, like, you know, they can make or break. And she was one that, like, she had some clout with who she was and who she was associated with because of just who she is. So, definitely, she's definitely a top three. I don't know who the other ones would be, but I think, like, I would almost put, like, Lita on that miss or on that list because of, like, who she, you know. Well, granted, she had an incredible in-ring, but just kind of what she did for the people that she was associated with was great. And so, yeah, it's just a piece of that. I don't think Chyna was necessarily underrated, but she was one that, you know, again, comes to mind when you're talking about like managers or valets and things like that.
So what you should have done in this era at this point is why not, God, you almost wonder, let me hit you with this. Did they miss the mark by not doing the NWO 2 years earlier? And what I mean by that is, like, why didn't they bring in Hogan as the outsider and come with Savage? You know what I mean? Like, what if they had, like, the three – and I'm not saying they had to be heels, and I'm not saying it's exactly the NWO, but to me, this feud has more juice on it. If it's like, hey, you know, you're coming here from up north, and we're gonna kick your ass.
Yeah, and even if it wasn't NWO, like, how do you form some kind of faction to make it a bigger deal at the time? Yeah, it's that what if you wonder, like, you know, if they had pulled the trigger a different time. There's the big boot from Hogan laying out.
When does he ever pin someone after the big boot?
And Sherry, and here we go with a little bit of interference. Sherry pulling the referee outside of the ring. After Flair suplexed him, and oh, Jimmy Hart taking just a terrible punch from Sherry. Tom, would you wear the suit that Jimmy Hart is wearing with the Hulk Hogan airbrushed all over it?
Now that would be a good Halloween costume.
That would be one. Yep, that's one. Sherry diving from the top of the rope onto Hogan as Flair was holding.
In a prom gown.
Yes, in a gown. Yeah, credit where credit's due. We say underrated, like it just working. you know, hell of a work rate right there. Just fantastic stuff there. Yeah. So is this one too, and we know we got it at Saudi, like these guys kind of like team captains, is there, and especially with Hogan's outside of the ring antics, is there any way to like successfully bring these guys back at this point?
I mean, I know people roll their eyes and think it's absurd, but it's like, I want Hulk Hogan to have one more physical altercation at WrestleMania. Does it have to be a one-on-one match? No. Could you put him in a tag match? Maybe. Maybe there's no chance of it. But dude, I mean, at the very least, if you could do, you know, your Baron Corbin type cutting the heel promo, Hogan comes out, American flag in the background, you know, red and yellow, real American, big boot, body slam. I mean, that's his like physical WrestleMania send off, right, man? Like, I'd love to see something.
Do you think he does it taped? Do they do it like an Undertaker type thing?
No. But they
you want to see him in the ring wrestling one more. Sure, you know, pulling her stocking off to choke Hogan with his flair.
And if it's not a match, just something physical, just one more time, Hogan getting physical in the ring. I'd love to see it, man. Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, you know, I mean, they're at an age where their last appearance is not going to be their best appearance, right? I mean, even yeah. Undertaker, when Undertaker retires, he's still going to come out in the full garb and give someone a tombstone 8 years from now.
Yeah.
God willing.
Right. Yeah. And that's just one of those, like, and granted, you know, especially watching the, you know, you and I both have been watching the Last Ride stuff and kind of seeing, I get it too. Like some of the, part of it is he doesn't know when to quit, but then part of it too is like, I get it. He wants it's a vicious cycle. Like, you know, Kelly said, I'm just like, or yeah, not Kelly. Oh my God, his wife's name escaping me right now. But
Michelle McCool.
the double M's, double K. Yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. Where he's saying, like, he has a great match, so then he feels like he keeps going, but then he has a bad match, so he has to keep going. Like, it's like he can't go out on a win and he can't go out on a loss. Like, he just doesn't know when to kind of hang it up, even though he said there's some moments he thought he was done, and then here we still are. Like, you know, wondering, is, are we going to get one more out of Undertaker? Like, what do we get? And I think too, like his love for Vince is like, you know, supersedes anything else that ever happens in the world. Like, just crazy, the connection those two have. Sherry missing a splash, Hogan, big flip off the top rope onto Hogan or onto the mat. Oh, and Hogan clipping Sherry. Oh, wow. That was terrible, too. And the crowd losing it, though.
There it is.
That was a terrible.
Now they're going nuts, man. Oh, God.
The figure
four. Put him in the figure four. Not a very good one, but he got it in.
You got Sherry on.
There's a lot of plunder. Oh. There you go. Let's
Mr. T getting involved now. You got Jimmy Hart up on the ring. Yep.
Brass knucks.
Yep. Oh, just knocking the hell out of Hogan with the brass knuckles. Two, nope, Hogan, the very early kick out from the, at the, that was barely the two kicking out from the brass knuckle punch.
Hulk it up.
Leave it to Hulk to kick out at 1 1/4 versus 2 1/4. Like, and again, hulking up, how many times does he need to hulk up in a match? You know, just crazy. Like, this one too, and I'll say it now again, this match has gone on for too long for me, but I get it, but we'll get there as well too. But and again, this is just kind of trading the back and forth here. There you go. The 1 2 3 and the crowd losing it. There you go. Hulk Hogan, the new champ of the world. Look at the fireworks inside. Just, yep.
There you go. All right.
Shaq Holton. Shaq and Mr. T.
So there's your payoff to Hulk Hogan being in WCW. Let's jump right into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
Well,
yeah, well, you know, I just, so, you know, yeah, I have no,
you seem stressed, speechless. Out.
It's just because I think I expected more and it just wasn't there. So
what you expected more of, what, the physical match or the crowd or what?
It's just a little bit of everything. Yeah. Okay. I think I just expected a little bit more from everything. I think, yeah, we're jumping the gun here on the score, but you know, yeah, it was not as, as inciting and as enthralling. I was not, you know, the more recent, like Shane and Angle had me more kind of glued to the screen than this one did. So, but
do you think part of it is that it was just too predictable?
I think that was part of it too. I think part of it is
if he debuts, and again, I'm going back to my idea from earlier, but if he debuts versus Vader and Vader just beats the shit out of him for the whole match, are you sitting there going, dude, is he going to win? Like, you know, I mean, imagine Vader beating up Hulk Hogan and maybe even Hogan doing a blade job, but then coming back to win. That to me is more interesting than, you know, him in the ring. Part of the challenge too, Hogan's a big bastard. So him in the ring with Flair, Flair's smaller. I mean, yeah. You watch this and you're like, oh, come on, Hulk Hogan's going to win. Like this really isn't that interesting.
Part of that too is like Hogan dominated most of the match. It was probably like 80% of the match. Like Hogan, it really was never in doubt that he was going to win.
Yeah.
You know, Flair didn't, I mean, he got some offense in, but like neither guy, there was really a ton of it, you know, and how many times you got to Hulk up to win? Like, you know, I think if you had cut about 5 minutes off of this match, you may have gotten maybe something a little bit tighter, but who knows too. So. But yeah, so for the straight up aftermath, though, what we got here, of course, Flair has now left the ring. He is losing the WCW World Heavyweight Championship after we said it kind of got the unification just a month before and things like that. So the two of them, though, really continued to feud quite a bit over the year, really the next year or stuff like that. So again, like we said, like this match, it was really summer 1994. But they had a couple more matches really kind of capping off at Halloween Havoc with the Steel Cage retirement matches, which is a match for another day. But you kind of having that one too. And once again, Hulk won that one as well too, with Mr. T was a special guest referee of that one. And so Hogan, though, you know, winning the championship, he was on TV kind of doing this. Like he started really becoming the poster child for WCW and doing this. And then, you know, Flair as well, too. He took some time off after that and then kind of came back and, like you said, got involved with Vader and the kind of storyline there. So, you know, just how it played out, you know, just interesting. Neither of these guys, you know, really went anywhere after this. Just, or I say went anywhere, like went away. They both just kind of kept feuding, having different matches, you know, Hogan being the really the face of WCW in a lot of ways. So, yeah, I mean, just interesting kind of aftermath, how it played out though. So, Tom, you got any thoughts on any of that?
No, nothing more than I covered. You know, I mean, I think I made it known how I felt about all of this. Is, I mean, it's not bad. It's not great. Bobby Heenan, I still have the it on in the background.
So do I, yeah.
He just looks absolutely distraught. God, Heenan was so good. At one point, he's like, you know, Shaquille O'Neal is only 5'11 without his shoes on.
It's always good stuff. So where do these guys rank? What are kind of some of the reviews here? I'm sure we're going to have some interesting takes on some of this. So 1994, as we've been adding it, Hogan was number 2 on the PWI. Flair was number 3 on the PWI. So Pro Wrestling Torch, the kind of write-up that they had from this one was, it was the dream match of the decade, Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair. And some would argue it took place a decade too late, which that's what we said. That notwithstanding, a near-packed Orlando arena cheered and booed every move in the main event of WCW's Bash at the Beach pay-per-view event. In the end, Hogan pinned Flair as expected and became the WCW World Heavyweight Champion for the first time. The scene was almost a flashback to Hogan's days in WWF, paralleling some of WWF's major events on pay-per-view and NBC. And so kind of having that, he ended up giving it 4 stars on this one.
Whoa, hold on. Meltzer gave this 4 stars.
That's the torch.
I'm sorry. Keller gave this match four stars. Wow.
Yes, 4 stars. Right. So.
The only thing I can say, because it doesn't feel like 4 stars, is maybe the wrestling was just so bad during this era.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of it. And I'm assuming you still have it on too. You got Hogan walking through the back with the belt, kind of celebrating, things like that. Now, while he gave the match a 4, he gave the overall show a 6.5. Where he said, if I had part in putting this event together, and if my primary focus was on making sure the Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair spectacle was memorable and smoothly executed, I would be extremely sensitive to criticism about the show. Most everything was well done when it comes to Flair versus Hogan. The match was booked to achieve the maximum number of pops for Hogan and to provide the fewest excuses for fans to cheer Flair. That was accomplished. Oh, what charisma Hogan has. After a 3-year layoff or something like that, which I know wasn't nearly that long, I had forgotten exactly how good Hogan is at connecting with a crowd. So kind of interesting.
Well, he's one of, if not the best of all time at just crowd connection, reading the crowd, reacting to the crowd. I mean, go watch his match at WrestleMania 18 versus The Rock. Mm. I mean, it wasn't a good match, but the crowd's insane, and it's a classic because of just what he was able to do with that crowd.
So, and one of the beat writers here actually gave the show a 4 out of 10 and saying the match itself was as good as it probably could have been, considering Hogan is one of the ultimate egomaniacs in the business and is also one of the most physically limited. Flair deserves much praise for his efforts in carrying Hogan to a good match. The big problem here is with the front office. They are trying to recreate the WWF of the mid 80s and that will fail miserably in this attempt. And so kind of hot there. I thought that was interesting. So finally, though, getting into the Wrestling Observer newsletter and this one and kind of what you said that and this is Dave Meltzer. Make no mistake about it. Bash at the Beach was a huge success. I don't think it was close to the best pay-per-view show WCW has put on of late, but it accomplished what it needed to. And at least as far as the first show went, the Hogan signing was success. 3¼ stars. So you got Pro Wrestling Torch giving it 4, Meltzer giving it 3¼ stars. Thoughts?
So the match wasn't great. The build for what it could have been between these two was not great. Okay. Yep. So, you know, you think it's Hogan, it's Flair. Where's the great promo? Like send me the link of, hey man, you got to see this promo a week before these two squared off face to face in the ring on Nitro. And I know Nitro didn't exist then, but my point is there isn't that Rock Hogan face off. There isn't that Andre Hogan Piper's Pit. There isn't the Warrior Hogan face-to-face prior to Royal Rumble prior to WrestleMania 6. There isn't the Savage Hogan Saturday night's main event blow-off. There's nothing like that here. So in terms of the build, wasn't good, okay? The match, crowd lit up at the very end, but it was not a good physical match. I mean, even by Hogan standards, it was not a good match, above average match. And then the aftermath and kind of what they did with these two wasn't that great. So the Hogan WCW debut, from a historical standpoint, it's massive. What it did for business, it's massive. But the reality is that this, if you just look at it from a wrestling storyline, wrestling match standpoint, and don't worry about the business and the numbers and what would happen, doesn't really do much for me. So with all that, I'll give the payoff a 6. like, I don't want to say it sucked, and there is some historical significance to it, but in the if you look at it in terms of all of Hulk Hogan's body of work during this era, let's just call it, you know, mid 80s to mid 90s.
Yeah.
Certainly not above average. Okay. I mean, if you hold this match up against his WrestleMania matches in terms of wrestling, in terms of build, in terms of crowd, it's not there. So yeah. I'll give it a 6. What about you?
I'm actually going to, I'll come right out. I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
I'm going to go much slower. I think that just, you're right. And I agree with you on every, of like, you busted your nut too quick. Like, there's no other way to put it of just like, it was kind of like the Fiend type thing. Like, they gave it to us so quick, we didn't have time to even enjoy it. And by the time, like, and then, you know, you get all this terribleness that comes after it. And so, and it's just not what, you know, it's just not what I want to see. It's not what I expect. I thought there was a little piece of this too. Like, we talked through the card itself a little bit, but one of these pieces, and I kind of think it speaks to the long-term thinking of WCW and what we were getting. So this show would have been a perfect opportunity to really show off their talent roster outside of Flair and Hogan for all of the pay-per-view purchasers who WCW would hope by next year's Bash, which wouldn't have Hogan Flair as the main event. Not enough is done on the undercard to get viewers excited about WCW's new generation. Steve Austin was in a very good match, but wasn't featured as the next major star, which we know what happened there. Sting wasn't on the show. Brian Pillman wasn't on the show. What was on the show was a series of lame finishes, old wrestlers, and worn out match storylines. Nothing to get excited about. I wonder, is that kind of where just I'm at and like watching some of these, like, I just really don't want to watch Hogan Flair anymore. You know, I'm excited to kind of learn about it. It's just part of wrestling history, but at the same time, like, it's just, I know that the in rink, and I think the longer we've done this show, the more I realize just how limited Hogan is in the ring, like, and kind of what he's doing and kind of, you know, his interactions and things like that. So, but he's still Hulk Hogan. I get it. But yeah, so I'm going to go with the 4 on this one. It just, I just can't give it more than that. You know, there were some good moments. I said good moment in the build with like how they introduced him. But like you said, they should have, if you're going to make him, he just didn't turn out to be the kind of superstar, at least right away, and having this match, the superstar that, you know, I would have hoped for, even though he's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I just, again, if within reason of knowing who's on the WCW roster at the time, to me, I just see a bloody Hulk Hogan overcoming a shit kicking from Vader. Because that's a match you had never seen before.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
And they'd never been in the same promotion before. I mean, right. So, and again, I think you do a million buys. Don't get me wrong. People want to see Hogan Flair, but I think more importantly, how's Hogan going to be in WCW? You know, what's the presentation going to be? Is he going to wear the red and yellows? What music's he coming out to? Is he going to win? You know, hey, I'll spend $25 and give this thing a flyer and see what happens. So,
yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So, well, good stuff. Good episode. All that, you know, all that good stuff. So we've got, of course, on our social media at Payoff Pod, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you know, that stuff. I'm not going to go through it all. You all know the deals. So good stuff here. Make sure to keep tuning in here. We're coming up on the big Podiversary or Payoff-iversary, whatever we're calling
it. Yeah, and for our 50th episode, I guess we should announce it here, or our 1-year anniversary episode, which I think is number 50 because of 2 weeks off for Christmas. We're going to cover this Hulk Hogan versus the Butcher match from Starrcade 94. I'm just kidding.
Super exciting. I'm looking forward to that one already.
All right, dude. Good stuff.
Everybody.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, this is great. Thanks everybody as always for kind of tuning in. Tom, I'll let you send us home.
All right. As always, thank you for joining us on The Payoff.